The Clockmaker by Beth Green. Performed by Danielle Cohen. Ears ringing, mouth still buzzing with the shock of the last shot of absinthe, Rachel stumbled up the stone staircase and burst out of the medieval-themed basement bar and into the cold November night air. She'd done it! She rubbed her neck, hardly believing she'd had the guts to steal the top-secret data. Just as Michael instructed, she'd waited and sipped absinthe at the bar until she had the chance to swap out the USB drive in the tall man's briefcase with a substitute. It had been an easy task, only a few seconds' work. The drive fit perfectly in the hidden pocket, which, in a splurge of gleeful anticipation, she'd had a tailor insert in her coat lining. The coat was one of several luxuries she'd allowed herself, but only one of many treats she anticipated after she got paid for tonight. Eager to get out of sight before her theft was discovered, Rachel slipped into the shadows of a nearby alley to get her bearings. She had 15 minutes to find the Hotel Orloi and give the USB drive to Michael. But which way to the hotel? She'd spent the whole weekend playing tourist in Prague to learn the streets of the old town and give herself an alibi in case her company got suspicious that one of their underling accountants was in the same city on a mini-break the day the firm's most important project data was stolen. She'd dutifully walked the cobblestones, studied the maps, and even taken a stultifying tour of old town architecture. The medieval streets of Prague, one of Europe's best-preserved capitals, were notoriously convoluted. The absinthe she drank tonight had more of an effect than planned. It was fragmenting her thoughts. But, even dizzy, she knew where she was going. She needed to turn here and... No. She stopped again and rubbed her hands for warmth. Nothing on the dark, barren street was familiar. On her way to the assignment, she'd taken note of shops and restaurants to guide her back. Turn left at the jazz bar, right at the wax museum. But where the hell were her landmarks? And why was it so dark? She must have turned into some residential area where tourists hadn't yet penetrated. There were no comforting neon signs assuring her of cheap beer, free exchange rates, or lurid sex shops. No artificially frosted windows displaying curated boutique wares. No streetlights. Not even a goddamn pub dispensing the country's famous Pilsner beer. Even stranger, she couldn't hear the regular hubbub of city life that would extend beyond the old quarter. The rumble and almost imperceptible vibrations of the metro system. The honk of an impatient taxi. The laughter of people spilling out of the bar to smoke on the sidewalk. She must have made a wrong turn. The absinthe, the excitement had addled her. Time was wasting. She had 5 or 10 minutes to find her way to Michael now. Was it safe to turn on her cell phone and use the Maps app to find the hotel? She had to meet Michael. Wanted to meet him. To see the look of gratitude on his face when she handed over the drive. To ask him what his plans were next week when her actions tonight had made them both rich. She slipped the phone out of her coat pocket, nearly dropping it from her numb fingers, and jabbed the power button. The screen remained dark. Of all the times for a dead battery! The air must be too cold. She walked to the next intersection. It was creepy how quiet this neighborhood was. She didn't see any shops, bars, hotels, none of the city's ubiquitous tour groups passing by. Tour groups. That reminded her. Rachel turned her face to the sky and scouted the rooftops. Prague was the city of 1,000 spires, the guide had said. One of the distinctive cupolas could lead her to a central landmark. But it was no use. She could see nothing. A thick haze was creeping down the buildings and had already obscured the roofline. Well, shit. She had to do something, so she chose a direction and walked. Somewhere above the fog, a full moon lent its brightness to the haze, creating a luminescence that helped her avoid stepping in holes where cobblestones were missing and leap over piles of horse manure that must have been left by one of the city's tourist carriages. She drew further into her coat and hurried. The absinthe had burned its way down to her stomach while her head felt like it was going to float off into the descending fog. She would be too late. Michael had warned her. Only 15 minutes from the theft to the delivery or they'd be compromised. Once the tall man realized what she'd taken from the briefcase. At last, a sign of life interrupted her thoughts. Footsteps and voices echoing in the canyon of shuttered buildings. She needed to be smart, her hands clenched in her pockets. What if the tall man already discovered the cuckoo USB drive in his briefcase? Sent men after her? Instinct pushed her to walk faster, and when she spotted the empty mouth into a passage, one of the warren-like tunnels that slithered through the city's buildings and connected side streets, she ducked into it. But came up short when iron grates barred her path. Precious seconds later, she re-emerged on the street. The people were audibly closer. She ran now, feeling herself slide into panic, brain fuzzy with the alcohol. At the corner? Relief. The street spilled out into Old Town Square. Of course. She shouldn't have had that last shot of absinthe. In front of her, the town hall with its dual-dial astronomical clock. When her tour passed through Old Town Square today, she'd heard all about the centuries-old clock. She had stood shivering in the cold while they waited 20 minutes to see the clock chime the hour, so some stupid puppets would come out and ring a bell. The people in her tour group had been so very disappointed that the tower behind the dials was under construction. Sheets of green netting draped a scaffolding around the clock, which shrouded everything but the clock dials and 4 eerie sculptures along its top. Rachel hated the sculptures on sight. The eyes of those figures, particularly the skeleton, had seemed to watch her, drilling into her thoughts. It was a ridiculous sensation, like a child's fear of the dark, but one that made her so uncomfortable she had to avert her eyes from the clock. Instead, she watched the shadows of workers underneath the netting, tapping and measuring as they worked. Tonight, that netting was gone. Only the wooden skeleton of scaffolding remained. She'd check the time and then rush to Michael and the hotel. It was only a few streets away. The glee she'd felt when she palmed the USB came back. But for a second, she hesitated before embarking across the open square. Was something different? She glanced at the ornate plague column towering on her right, phallic and somber in the moonlit haze. She remembered a more modern statue in its place. There were more differences. In the afternoon, thousands of people packed the square. Tourists and school groups, touts and scammers. But now the festival atmosphere was erased. Instead, the only souls clustered around a sad bonfire. They leaned against dilapidated kiosks and tubs of apples and potatoes. Debris littered the area between the structures. An upturned wheelbarrow, a blacksmith's hammer, an iron tub containing the glowing embers of a kiln. So much for Prague being a 24-hour party town, like the tour guide had boasted. This place was dead. She continued across the square toward the clock. That afternoon, one worker had come out while Rachel's tour group loitered. A stocky man, younger than Rachel, with long blonde hair tied back in a tail. Not her type at all, but, in her boredom, she'd watched him anyway. He caught Rachel staring and touched his fingers to his forehead like a salute. Then he'd raised a bottle of beer, drunk deeply, and walked toward her. She remembered her face growing hot as he approached. When he got right to her, something shiny fell from his pocket and rolled against the heel of her boot. He didn't notice, just kept strolling out of the square, a man getting off a long shift at work. None of her tour group had noticed either, so Rachel had pretended to drop her glove and then picked it up with the item, a 50-crown coin, and snugged it deep into her jeans pocket like a lucky talisman. It was still there now. She was almost close enough to the clock dials to read the time in the moonlight. Behind her, the relentless footsteps drew closer. Rachel risked a glance just as they shot out of the alleyway. The leader carried a lantern, and indignation was apparent in the cloaked men's strides. She breathed easier. The lantern, the cloaks and hats were costumes. The men must belong to one of the city's ghost tours. A fun tour for certain types of people, she supposed. A guide, dressed in medieval garb, toted a lantern while telling his flock of tourists scary tales. This was a tour and nothing more. Nothing to do with her. As she hurried toward the clock tower, she wondered how the cafes around the square hid away their awnings and wicker chairs. Tonight, the colonnades around the square were bare, and the blank doorways of the buildings dead-eyed her like so many skulls. She was almost at the clock when the group of men drew up beside her, pointing, their voices raised. She veered left to get out of their way. This is it, she thought. Despite their clothes, they're not a tour. The tall man sent someone after me. She waited for the formal accusation. She was prepared to send the men to Michael, explain it wasn't her plan to begin with. But then she heard what they were saying. Their voices echoed off the buildings, 1,000 times louder than a crowd. They spoke oddly, but she understood them clearly.
That's him,
one shouted, pointing toward the clock. Rachel saw a man's figure under the scaffolding.
How dare you use my face? Another man screamed.
The shadow opened a small door under the clock that Rachel hadn't noticed before. The guide pushed ahead, coming so close to Rachel that she felt the quick, blissful heat of the lantern on her hands. He ignored her. Her shoulders unknotted. They weren't after her. She'd be all right. The clock dials were visible now from where she stood. There were two dials, an upper one that told the time and phases of the sun and planets and a lot of other mumbo-jumbo she didn't remember, and a lower one that showed a calendar. But looking at it now, her eyes were again caught by the dreadful life-sized sculptures that decorated the brick next to the dials. The skeleton statue, representing death, bony hand ringing a bell to summon souls. The other statues representing sins. Greed, vanity, pleasure. The men reached the tower just as the iron door below the clock slammed shut. They banged on it, their knuckles scraping the metal. When it wouldn't budge, they kicked it, creating hollow clangs that echoed around the square. The hobos attending the bonfire in the middle of the square eased themselves away, receding to shadows themselves. Should she also run? To get to the hotel most directly, she needed to pass the clock. Maybe the men still wouldn't notice her. Cautiously, she edged by them, struck by how beautiful the clock's gilded dials were in the lantern light. The men made so much noise, they were sure to attract the cops. Earlier, Rachel almost hoped to find a police officer to ask directions, but now it would be much more convenient if she wasn't seen by any officials. She was almost safe at the hotel, almost to Michael. A colonnade ran along the near side of the building, providing cover.
Are you looking for me?
A voice out of the shadows made her jump. She stopped, cold air rushed up her spine as she shrank into her coat. She knew that voice. It had last offered her a glass of absinthe. The tall man. How did you know? She started, forcing a note of gaiety into her voice. Her mind spun. She could talk her way out of this. She could. But her voice died in her throat when the man stepped from the shadows into the hazy, moonlit street. She was mistaken. It wasn't the tall man. This was the blonde worker with a ponytail she'd seen working on the clock that afternoon. But no, it wasn't him either. Or was it? Do I know you?
You saw me this afternoon. Or perhaps I should say, you will have seen me.
That doesn't make any sense.
I'm afraid your hotel isn't open tonight.
Oh God, a creepster. Tonight of all nights. Jackass, she whispered.
She began to walk away. Stop, he called. I see that you mistrust me. Let me reassure you.
She kept walking.
Rachel, he said, don't leave.
She pivoted mid-step, hope warming all the places that had just been cold. How did you know my name? Did Michael send you? Is he looking for me? I got turned around, but now...
The man laughed. He pushed back the sleeve of his blue canvas coat to show her a large gold watch. Involuntarily, she stepped closer. The watch had many faces all composed into one. The tick of the hands was steady, mesmerizing. Now that she saw the watch, she could hear its movement from where she stood, even with the men shouting at the clock tower door just behind them.
Did Michael give you that?
It's time. For you, he said, covering the watch back up with his sleeve.
Time for me to what? Take the USB somewhere else?
He pointed behind him, where the men now held burning sticks to the scaffolding. Time for you to learn what these men have not.
Jesus, who had Michael hired? What a wacko.
I gotta get out of here. Somebody will call the police. Those people shouldn't be trying to burn that down. That's a national treasure or some shit.
The man laughed. The clock is in no danger. He snapped his fingers and the men's lantern and burning sticks extinguished. Singed black marks marred the scaffolding, but it stood.
Wow,
Rachel said. The men threw the lantern down and one shook the scaffolding instead. The worker extended a hand to Rachel. Habituated by years of office etiquette, she stuck her palm into his. His fingers were warm, but, she realized, hers were almost blue with cold. Where had her gloves gone? Back at the bar?
It's nice to meet you, Rachel, he said, shaking her whole arm with his grip. I'm the clockmaker.
He let go of her hand and the warmth faded.
You want to know the time, the clockmaker said. It is much, much earlier than you think.
Oh, thank God, she said. Is Michael still waiting? I'm not too late getting to the hotel.
Your hotel, as I said, is not open tonight. But I will take you there. First, though, let me explain something about my beloved city.
The clockmaker pointed at the tower. The men now fought amongst themselves. They writhed on the cobblestones, punching each other. Rachel's shoulders felt heavy as she watched, as if the bruises from each blow were coming up on her own skin. One of the men got free and ran back across the square. The others chased him.
Rachel, on your tour, you saw me.
She nodded.
While you were learning about the figures that flank the clock.
Right, Rachel said. Those are freaky, but honestly...
As if he hadn't heard her, the clockmaker pointed again at the clock.
The top sculptures are there to remind the populace of their sins. Greed. The man with the money bag. The man who tried to burn it up. He'd make money if we had to build it again.
Rachel wasn't moving her legs, but it seemed like she was getting closer and closer to the clock. The horrible figures grew larger before her.
And then, the clockmaker said, the leader admires himself so much he thought I put his face on vanity. He's not happy with the likeness. Thinks the eyes aren't right. And this one here. He looks happy, doesn't he?
The third statue played a stringed instrument. As her vision sharpened, she recognized the statue's likeness to the drunkest man, the one who had thrown the first punch.
He represents all the earthly pleasures and perils. Her vision returned to normal, but her neck throbbed.
Cool story. I have got to go.
But Rachel's boots wouldn't move. And this sculpture, the clockmaker continued. The fourth one. What do you see?
The fourth sculpture was the one she most wanted to avoid, the skeleton that rang the bell. Before she answered, the clock's pieces started to move. Doors opened, chimes rang out. Goosebumps rose on her arms.
Look, Mr. Clock, whatever, I'm going, she said.
But her boots still wouldn't move. I want to help you, Rachel, the clockmaker said. Every day I evaluate the people who stand before the clock. Everyone has within them some of these qualities, like that little group of men. But they don't want to see themselves depicted so truly there, so they don't truly see. They laugh, they joke, and in your era, they take pictures. When they look at the skeleton, they see something that will only come later, a long time from now.
Rachel's eyes fixed on the skeletons. Did the grinning face look familiar?
Every day I take measure of the souls who come to view the clock. This man is full of greed, that one full of lust, the clockmaker said. And sometimes I see someone like you, Rachel. A little criminal who could use my help.
The clockmaker was close to her now. When had he stepped nearer? The light from the dying bonfire threw red shadows across them both.
Michael's not waiting, is he?
She had to say it, but she was certain she was too late. He'd hired this weirdo to tell her their plans were cancelled, to scare her. It was working.
It is time for you to make a choice, the clockmaker said.
I'm sorry I let Michael down, but this is not my fault. He should have figured out a way.
And I think I can help you.
At last, Rachel's boots allowed her to move, so she stepped back.
Listen to my offer.
Okay. She was so close to the payoff, damn it. There's got to be a way around this. You want to help me try to sell the USB drive? Someone else has got to want it if Michael's first buyer was prepared.
You need to listen.
Fine. What?
The man you stole from has found you. But with my help, you can have your life back. Your attempt at theft will be unsuccessful, and you'll lose your job.
Well, that's stupid, she said. I can't lose my job and the payoff money.
Aha, he said. So tonight's theft must be successful at all costs.
Rachel wrinkled her nose.
This guy had no idea what was on the line for her. The money, Michael, getting out of her stupid, low-responsibility job with her condescending office mates. She wanted to go do stuff that people envied, have people listen to her, upgrade her life, not sit behind a spreadsheet 36.4 hours per week every week until she retired and died of boredom.
Look, I need that cash. You don't have to understand. She started walking.
You're right. The hotel is that way.
She heard his footsteps follow her. The hotel's street was as cold and lifeless as the other ones, but had been lit with candles in heavy iron lanterns. As they walked, one by one the candles fizzled out, leaving the street ahead of them in shadow. The icy mist had now descended to street level. The Hotel Orloi was just ahead. This afternoon it had been a handsome green building with a small glass door leading in and an eye-catching neon sign outside. The door had a funny plaster face above it, a horned man adorned in grapes. But now there was no neon sign. There were no glass doors on any of the buildings. Instead, each had iron grates or wooden slabs in the doorframes. None of the shops she remembered were in evidence, nor the glass storefronts she'd browsed just this afternoon, dreaming about what she could get with her half of the money.
It's number 35,
she muttered to herself. Number 35. The clockmaker's footsteps continued behind her. Finally, she spotted a building bearing that same plaster devilish face.
I found the hotel, she said over her shoulder. You don't need to keep following me.
Are you sure this is your hotel? He said.
Yes.
Where's the sign?
It's...
She pointed, but there was nothing there. Just a blank wall.
Out for repairs.
How do you get inside?
Maybe they don't have 24-hour reception.
She jogged to the wall and looked for a keypad.
There'll be a way to swipe my card.
There's nothing.
She stopped, her heart in her mouth. The building was just a home. She was standing in front of an ordinary residence, a flower box with dead blooms at the window where this afternoon concert posters had been pasted, a garland of forest leaves on the wooden door instead of the clean glass panes showing the way to reception. It was not her hotel.
What's going on?
She asked in the bravest voice she could muster.
You haven't figured it out yet. There's that vanity, he said, thinking you could pull this off.
But I did. I stole the USB stick.
You haven't noticed there's no people around? You don't hear streetcars, car horns, no one with modern technology. Let me ask you, does your phone work?
It's out of battery.
Oh, Rachel, he said. What do you think has happened?
I think you must have put something in my drink at the bar. Who are you really working for?
It was possible he was still on her side. She wanted to think that. She had 500,000 reasons to hope that. He pulled the coat away from his wristwatch again. This time the timepiece gleamed from an inner light. When he touched it, the mist dissolved, and she saw the glow of LED lights and sensed the hustle of people and heard the thwub-thwub beat of electronic music. She stepped toward the hotel door, but then he touched his watch again, and the mist and the silence returned. Under her coat's hood, she imagined something cold, steely cold, on the tender place where her ear met her neck. Her stomach flopped. She wished she'd never met Michael, never heard about his plan. All she had to do was deliver one tiny USB stick, and then all of that money that they'd already wired to her bank account would double. She believed it all, was counting down the days till she left her old life and disappeared. But then he'd hired this guy and bailed on her. Damn Michael.
Did you drug me? And where is Michael? I'd like to talk to him, please.
It was better if she remained polite. Who knew what he was capable of? Instead of answering, he asked, When you saw me this afternoon at the clock tower, do you remember what happened?
Oh, of course.
It was so simple. Why hadn't she remembered? You dropped something and I picked it up. I should have given it back to you and I didn't. She dug in her pocket for the coin. This would solve it. He'd let her go, take her to a hospital to get the drugs pumped out of her. She held out the coin.
Here.
Oh, no, he said. I expected you to keep that. Thank you.
What?
It was a test. At the clock, I could hear your thoughts and feel your desires. I sensed you would need my help. This proved it.
He smiled.
You followed me all day because of a $2 coin.
Day isn't the right word. Do you recall what your tour guide said about the clock? If you paid attention, you would know the clock's figures were installed in the 1600s, and that a group became angry about their installation because they thought it mocked them. They were correct. So, Rachel. Welcome to the year 1629. I brought you here primarily to help you understand me and my abilities. However, you may stay in this time if you wish.
Rachel stared at him.
I can't go back in time. That's impossible. And even if I could, I wouldn't. What happened to women in the past is awful, she said. I'm living in the best time we've ever had now.
He shrugged. I brought you here to help you believe. Now, are you ready to make a choice?
Odds were she'd wake up in a minute in a hospital ward with her stomach being pumped for whatever kind of Euro-trash drugs he'd slipped in her absinthe. But for now, she'd better humour him. Please take me somewhere familiar. To my time, my hotel, wherever.
As you wish.
He walked away, and the lanterns popped and sputtered to life. There was nothing to do but follow. They turned into a passage where she saw people milling in the shadows, but when they passed, there was no one there. At the end of the passage, she sensed light, music. She caught a whiff of diesel fumes and cooking oil and the sharp scent of an over-applied cologne. When they exited, the fog was denser than before, brighter and more real somehow. Her neck and the side of her face hurt. She smelled the acid sweetness of absinthe and felt the dry rasp of its aftertaste on her tongue. Finally, the clockmaker stopped. She knew where they were.
Back at the absinthe bar.
Did you ever really leave?
She frowned. He made no sense, but she had no response. The pain in her neck had gotten worse. It was hard to concentrate.
I have a deal for you, he repeated.
Fine. What?
Your life as you know it is over. You rejected my offer to stay in 1629. A pity. I think you'd flourish. So now you have two choices. One, enter the bar and be caught with the USB drive. You will have failed, Michael. You will be fired, prosecuted, and imprisoned. Left with nothing, you will need to work harder than you ever have before.
The lingering taste of absinthe brought bile to the back of her throat. Rachel rubbed her hands together. She ached to go inside and warm up.
Why would anyone choose that option? She said.
He smiled. Or, two, you can enter and escape consequence. The tall man will know of your crime, but cannot harm you further.
The clockmaker's smile spread to a grin.
In a manner of speaking, you will have succeeded. But either way, I warn you, you will not get your money. You will not get your happy ever after.
Are you kidding? Number two, all the way.
Are you certain? You don't have much time.
Now you're the one worried about time, Rachel said. I wanted to get to that goddamn hotel to meet Michael in 15 minutes, and you kept...
Decide.
The surrounding smells intensified, especially the overwhelming scent of spilled absinthe. The tick from the clockmaker's watch grew louder, unbearably so. For the first time in the months since Michael approached her about helping him steal the project data, she felt uneasy. She wanted the reward, the excitement. The knowledge she'd taken something for herself from the company after wasting her life as a drone. If she didn't get the money either way, then she definitely couldn't get caught too. She'd lose her job, lose all credibility, would never find even another boring accounting gig. She'd have to apply at the job centre, hear the whispers of her neighbours when they found out she'd been fired. No, thank you.
My choice is to go back and not lose my job.
I thought that might be your answer, but I had to be sure. Remember, Rachel, from now on the clock only ticks one way.
He touched the watch face again. In time to that maddening ticking, Rachel jerked toward the bar as if cold hands pushed her. She stumbled through the door and down the stairs, entering the hot, close confines of the underground space. After the quiet streets, there was so much noise and so much light. Everyone was screaming at her, voices raucous and unintelligible.
and there was that pain behind her ear again. In one last tick of the clockmaker's watch, everything changed. She sprawled on the sticky bar floor, shards of glass on her cheek, absinthe in her hair. And that pain. How long had she been like this? Rachel looked up. The tall man's face loomed over her. She saw the dripping knife in his hand. Moments ago, its blade had punctured her neck. The floor was paved with stone, and oh, so cold. She knew why she recognized the skeleton's smile at the clock. It was her own smile, and it was her own time to go.